We are here to spread the radical notion that you're perfectly imperfect, just the way you are. Welcome to the Way You Are Project podcast. I'm your host, Erica Ormanovich. Join me as we have conversations about feminism, fat acceptance, body image, and parenting, with a goal to help you cultivate and live a more authentic life. Hello, everyone. You are listening to episode 4 of the Way You Are Project. And today I spoke with Sarah Vance, body image and self-worth coach and host of the Reclaiming You podcast. We talk about her journey from the fitness world as a competitive model and physical trainer into the work she does now, helping women revamp their relationships with themselves. We also shed some reality on the subject of self-care and about her relationship to fitness now, being fully recovered. I can't wait to share this with you guys as there's so much good information. But first, I want to ask if you haven't already to please go to iTunes and leave a rating and review as well as share this episode with a friend. You can also visit my website at thewayyouareproject.com for all of her links and contact information as well as the resources we talk about in this episode. Don't forget to sign up for my emailing list so you never miss an episode or a blog post. That's it for me, so let's hear from Sarah.
You're perfect. Just the way you are.
Hi, Sarah. How are you today?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today. I cannot wait to start talking.
Thanks for having me.
So for my listeners that might not be familiar with you or your work, could you give us a brief background on yourself and your journey and a little bit about the work that you do now?
Yeah, totally. So my name is Sarah Vance. I'm a body image and self-worth coach that specializes in helping women break free of the diet cycle and just accept their body as is and live their damn lives. That's really the short and sweet version of it. So I help individuals kind of let go of perfection, black and white thinking, people pleasing, and just really embrace who they are and figure out who they are so they can show up in the world authentically and powerfully. So the way that I got here is through my own journey of body acceptance and learning to have a better relationship with food and movement and all of that stuff. So a little bit of my background is that I'm an ICU nurse. I've been an ICU nurse for about 9 years now, going on 9 years. And I'm also a former bikini competitor, and I'm also a former personal trainer. So I had a pretty messed up relationship with food and quote unquote fitness because of my own journey. So I eventually got into movement and wanting to really, you know, eat a little bit better. And I say that with air quotes, because of my health. And that was related to my nursing degree. And that really kind of slowly went spiraling down into a more disordered pattern when I decided to become a bikini competitor. So, you know, that was a pretty rigorous situation where I was dieting pretty very, very strict. And then eventually it was the upwards of 2 hours a day in the gym, had full blown anxiety around my food, very fearful of foods that I would eat. I was swinging from binging to restriction quite frequently. I did not like my body. I had a lot of shame around my body, and I was just really uncomfortable in my skin. And it really led to the point where I was at nationals for a bikini competition, and I was like, is this it? Like, this is what I've been working for. I feel miserable. Emotionally, I felt miserable. Physically, I felt miserable. I didn't have a period. My hair was falling out. My energy was low. I had little to none sex drive. And I just had no energy in general. I was just tired in so many different levels of who I was. And I was really disconnected from my life. I kind of feel like my life was occurring outside of me, but I was just spending so much time in my head worrying about my body, food, when I was going to go to the gym next, when, what I was going to eat next, what I was eating, how many calories in this. It was just the constant narrative that was in my mind. So I knew something needed to change, but what happens for me and with many people I see this as well is that when you become disordered and you're in it, you're in the thick of it, it becomes your life. So I decided to become a personal trainer because that was the only way that I was going to be upholding all of this stuff that I was doing. It was the only way that I could continue going on as if I was going to get paid for it, because then I would have quote unquote no excuse to not be, you know, in the gym all the time. So I became a personal trainer and flew to California at one point for a fitness, like, entrepreneurial summit type, whatever. I don't even know what it is now. But basically, we were learning how to create an online business within the fitness industry. So I was actively doing exactly what I speak out against now. But when I was there, I was at the, I would say, the height of my disorder. I was very, very, very just not eating anything, hardly, full-blown anxiety. I couldn't even have a slice of pizza with my significant other at the time without having a breakdown at the restaurant. And all this time, I, you know, was just thinking that this was okay, but it also wasn't okay. So I was working with a photographer, a really well-known photographer in the fitness industry, and I remember him saying to me, "Don't worry, like, we'll Photoshop your stomach." And that was a really big turning point in my life, because I was like, this is such a lie. Like, this is a lie that I've been fed from all these people that I look up to. And this is also a lie that I would be portraying to other people. And my soul just, like, wouldn't let me do it. Like, I couldn't continue lying because I was so unhappy. I was not confident. And this was by no means healthy. And everybody thought that that's what it was when they saw me. It's just a very much the general appearance and the assumptions that we make based on bodies. And it's so much deeper than that for me and my individual story that, you know, I was not healthy at all. I was not happy. I was not confident. I was very just not in a good spot. So that's when things kind of sort of try to, like, change. So I kind of was like, I wanted to stop dieting, but I didn't know how to stop dieting, because it's very difficult to break away from the diet mentality in and of itself. So what I started doing is I started training clients, but I started taking them only women. And what happened is I started seeing all these amazing women that would come in for consultation just, like, beat themselves up with my initial consultation. They would just be so down on themselves. Everything that I was saying to myself internally, I was now hearing outwardly from these amazing human beings. And I just was like, they don't even see how amazing they are. And it was really eye-opening for me, because I was like, what if that's what's going on with me, that I don't even see how amazing I am, and that I can, there's so much more to me than this physical appearance. And so that's when I started to become really curious and started changing stuff, because I knew something needed to change. And I was really just super, super tired. Like, I asked myself, is this what I continue doing, you know, 20 years from now? And it was a resounding no. And that's when I knew that I needed to change. So fast forward through a lot, because is this journey does take some time. Mm-hmm. It's not always comfortable. There mm-hmm. is bumps along the way. It's very messy. So I don't want to give off the perception that it was just like, yeah, I stopped dieting and then everything was great, because that is so not the case. Yeah. Not the case at all. It was a very messy journey that required a lot of support, a lot of uncomfortable emotions, a lot of learning and unlearning, and a lot of rebuilding and discovering who I was. And so eventually I knew that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to help other women really start to feel peace around food and within their body, and to really know how amazing they truly are, and that they're more than a body, so they can go out there and live their damn lives, because we all have way more better stuff to do than worry about our size, weight, shape, or gene size. So that's what I do now, is just helping women reconnect with who they are, know that they're more than their, you know, weight, and that their worthiness is inherent, so they can just live the most fulfilling life that they truly want to have. And that's different for everybody. So that's the short and sweet version of it.
I love it. And I like how you mentioned that you felt like you were living, like, your life was happening outside of you. Cause I feel like I can relate to that so much. And when I started doing, when I started on my own personal journey and body acceptance, I feel like I realized, like, how much I was missing and how much, like, brain space I had now, and, like, even physical energy to go do things. And it was kind of like, wow, what do I want to do? Like, what do I actually like doing? Like, how do I want to actually spend my energy and my mental space? And it's just crazy, like, how much room opens up for you to get to know yourself.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens a lot of time, is that we are spending so much collective energy, not only just ourselves, but collectively as a culture.
Yes.
So much energy on this stuff, physical energy, emotional energy, money, time, and just so, I mean, the weight loss industry, the beauty and weight loss industry, is a $60 billion industry. So it's just like, imagine what how much power we could have and how much power we do have, mm-hmm. and how we could really shift that to do stuff in this world that has real meaning. Because I can tell you from my work as an ICU nurse, no one really gives a shit about, you know, the size of your waist or how much you weigh or how tight your ass is when you're on your deathbed. That's not what I personally want to be remembered by. And that's something that, you know, I ask people too, is that what's really important to you? And I think many of us can see that there are other priorities that are more important to us, but we're just not standing in those values as we are. We're just living by values of what our society and our culture says we should be living by. So it does open up a bunch of space in general, just to fill it back up with stuff that really, truly fulfills you and mm-hmm. that lights your soul on fire.
Yeah, I love that. And it's like scary space, like coming into it and like deciding to start doing that stuff. It can be scary. It's like uncharted territory. So it's definitely
The fear of unknown is huge.
Yeah.
Right? Because you like have this, it's almost like you had this hole filled with all this stuff and then you like take it away. And then there's this gaping black hole that you're like, Oh my God, I have no idea what's on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And what happens is, you know, we've been conditioned from our inner critics. And that's a lot of the work that I do is about our inner critic, the side of us that, you know, tells us we're not good enough, is to always think of the worst case scenario where it's like, oh, something horrible is going to be on that side. But I always like to encourage people to think of what are some possibilities? What else is out there? Like, don't go to the negative all the time. What else is out there? Like freedom, authenticity, feeling more deeper connection in your life, feeling fulfillment. Maybe it's something that you want to try. There's so much out there that could be filled in within that hole. And a lot of it is exploring it with curiosity, just like a child would. A child is full of unknown, right? When they're born. So it's just like being childlike and figuring out, oh, okay, maybe this, maybe that, and seeing what sticks and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. And even my therapist brings this up to me a lot because I always like to think about the worst case scenario. And she's like, well, what if the worst case scenario did happen? Like, then it would just happen. And then you would deal with it then. And then you would get over it. Just like you've always gotten over everything else difficult in your life. Like even the worst case scenario always like isn't always necessarily that bad. Like, you'll get through it.
And that's something I use too. I think that's really common, is that we can think of the worst case scenario, but we don't go a step further and say, okay, then what?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your relationship to fitness or movement after coming through, like, you know, like you said, you were in bikini competitions and a personal trainer. So how do you encourage people to relate to movement now? And then how did you navigate all that for yourself and get to where you are now?
So I will take this from the second question first. So my relationship with movement really did have to change, because I was only used to moving my body on the basis of manipulation, weight control, fear, punishment, and in general, just not enjoying it. So I really had to take a step back. I took about 3 to 4 months off of movement completely to A, heal my body, because it really needed to just like heal. I needed to really rest and let my body just kind of do the healing process that it needed to go through. And I also needed to get real with myself. Like I needed to ask myself some hard questions of my intentions as to why I'm doing this. If I even liked what I was doing, because there was a lot of stuff that I was doing that I didn't like. Like I didn't like getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and, you know, not moving my body on an empty stomach. Like, no, thank you. I value rest and I value sleep. And that's not something that I value. And that was only on the basis of what I had been conditioned to think, that that's something I should do on the basis of fear around my weight. So I had to get really real with myself and ask myself, what do I like to do? And then I tried a bunch of stuff. I tried, just like the curiosity piece that I was talking about earlier, I literally took like a spaghetti handball of stuff and threw it at the wall and just said, okay, let's see what sticks. So I tried multiple things just to see what I enjoyed. And I really started to incorporate movement in the sense of play in the beginning, where I used it as a form of enjoyment. I think that's something that within the traditional, you know, ideas of health and fitness is not being talked about, that we really need to, if we're going to talk about health, you know, movement, if we want to incorporate it in our lives, then that's fine. There's definitely benefits to movement. But if you're not enjoying it, then I wonder if it's even really worth it. Because that's what's really going to help us propel this forward and have it be something sustainable in our lives. And then also I had to get behind this idea that, you know, I had to work out because of what I was eating. So I had to do a lot of unlearning. So it took a lot of time, a lot of baby stepping into this. And then I also started moving my body for the purpose of what can my body do versus what does my body look like? And that can help. That can help a lot. But my relationship with movement, you know, it changed for years. It was the harder portion, I think, than food for me, because I also started competing in powerlifting. So I did that for a while. And I think for individuals that come from a place of having a messed up relationship with food, at least for myself, when I transitioned to what my body can do, then I was basing my worth and my esteem not on what my body looked like, but how much weight I could lift, mm-hmm. how fast I could run, how, you know, whatever. It was based on all these boxes that I could check as far as achievement. So I had to get real with myself and ask, what was my intention here? And I have now come full circle, and it's really for a place of just enjoyment and genuinely caring for my body. And I do it with basically like intuitive. If I want to rest, I rest. If I want to move, I move. And there's no guilt, shame, or anything attached to it. It just is another form of care for me.
Yeah, I feel like our society – sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to answer your first question.
Oh, right.
I might have answered it a little bit. So I think the best thing for people is to get honest with themselves. And a question that I had to ask myself, and then I ask a lot of my clients, is if this wouldn't change your body at all, if you had no prior knowledge of this, that it would change your body. And if you had no knowledge that people would praise you for this, because that's another thing, mm-hmm. would you still do it? So I think that's a good question to start at and just be curious about your own answer.
Yeah, I really like that, because I think a lot of the times I think a lot of people feel like they're supposed to move a certain way. And then when they do, like, oh, I should exercise more. And then what exercise looks like to them and what they feel like they're supposed to do, rather than, do I enjoy this? Like, for my whole life, I was running. And then when I finally slowed down and, like, asked myself, like, I hate running, so I'm not going to run anymore. Like, life's too short to do something that you hate for really no reason. I mean, like, there's other ways for me to get that same enjoyment and, like, for the feeling in my body that it gave me without doing something that I hated.
Exactly. Yeah. And going back to how you feel is so important. You know, if you really, how you feel, how do you want to feel, and how do you actually feel?
Yeah. I think involving the body in the conversation is so important when it comes to movement. And I feel like we're programmed to just, like, push through it, or, you know, just not take days off and do more, and never just, like, it's okay to take a day off. It's okay to not go to the gym every single day, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, that's just the narrative that we've been taught. If you mm-hmm. look at what we're being taught and what we see on social media, you know, quote unquote, team no days off or whatever the hell, you know, it's frowned upon to take time off.
Yeah.
And even if it's a day off, I mean, not only a day, but a month off. I mean, you have other stuff to do in your life. And sometimes it's impractical to think that you're just going to be having this. You know, when I think of movement for myself, movement is something to add to my life. It is not part of, it's not my life. It's something to add. It's a supplement to my life. So if I'm putting my life and what I want to do in my life first, then movement is going to be take a back seat when I need to prioritize other things in my life that I truly value. That doesn't mean that I don't value movement, because I do, but there's other stuff in my life, like connection with people, adventure, experiencing things out in the world, are more important to me than spending time in the gym, because it's not going to go anywhere. Like, life is way too short. And I'd rather go out and live my life than be worried about that stuff. And it's, I think we have this idea that, like, there's going to be these drastic changes with ourselves if we take time off. And that really isn't the case. It really isn't. I just think that we operate in such a fearful manner when it comes to movement and health. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of myths out there. And that's, you know, where I encourage people to look at books like Body Respect by Linda Bacon and Health at Every Size to kind of see the truths that we've been missing all along.
Mm-hmm. So that brings me to wanting to ask you to explain a little bit about your Fuck Your Fitspo hashtag that I see you use on social media. I was curious about, like, where you got that idea from and really, like, what you're trying to do with it. I really like it.
Thank you. Yeah. So Fuck Your Fitspo actually, you know, like I said, I came from Fitspo. I used FITSPO. That was where I was bred from.
Yeah.
And on top of that, my parents were bodybuilders. So it's like FITSPO was part of my life for such a long time. And I was an individual that used that word and hashtag, if you will. So Fuck Your FITSPO really is about just countering the messages that we hear in the FITSPIRATION realm and typical health and fitness that are actually kind of damaging. I think it's my way of showing the ridiculousness of it and showing how damaging and problematic that it could be, and giving a different narrative and allowing people to see the truths that I've been talking about, that it's okay to rest, that, you know, fitness isn't based on aesthetics. Those are two different things. That, you know, if a fitness professional is telling you to keep pushing through pain, then that's a problem. So it's about showing and highlighting the ridiculousness of FITSPO, so we can bring attention to it, because it is rampant in our society and our culture, and especially social media. I think that FITSPO and health are becoming more and more of a problem, which is odd to think about, because traditionally these are things that are supposed to be relatively okay and good for us, but they're becoming more and more of a problem, where there's more disorder, there's more disrespect to the body, there's more disrespect for ourselves, we're operating out of punishment and fear, so all this stuff. So it's about highlighting the ridiculousness of FITSPO and offering a different narrative that is more laced in truth than fear.
Yeah, I love that. It's just so, like, brash and to the point, and yeah. Every time I see those, I'm like, hell yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think the first one that I actually did, I was actually in the gym and I had overheard something and I was just like, fuck this shit. Like, this is just like ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And I think that was the first time that I was just like, no. Like, I was just like, I just know. So that's where it stemmed from. And I enjoy it. I love it. I think that it offers, you know, a different perspective on some of the stuff that people aren't really seeing. I think a lot of us know this stuff, but I think it's time for somebody to be like, no, like, it's okay to actually rest and give that permission and bring and highlight the ridiculousness of it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's so important. So another thing I wanted to talk about that I feel like I see you talk about a lot, and I love your take on it and I love your transparency in it, is self-care. And I feel like self-care is so revolutionary in, like, coming to a good place in your relationship with yourself and your body, and really, like, putting yourself first. I feel like it's so important to, like, getting to a really healed place. And I love the way that you talk about self-care and about how it's so much more than the mainstream perception of it, which I feel is, like, you know, girls' night out and bubble baths and, you know, like, treat yourself, like, go shopping or something. And I feel like it's so much more than that.
It is. And that is what we hear, is that it's just, you know, bubble baths and going shopping and, you know, self-care Sunday, which is great. That's fine. But there's nothing wrong with bubble baths. There's nothing wrong with going shopping as forms of there's nothing wrong with any of those things. But I also like to blow it up a little bit. And the real of self-care is that self-care is a way of self-preservation, to keep showing up in your life how you want to, so you can continue living fully. That's really what it is. So it's not a matter of coping or using it as a band-aid when you don't feel well. It really is on the basis of self-preservation. So how you can care for yourself every single day so you can continue showing up. So it's a way of filling your cup back up or keeping it full when it is at a level that is okay for you. And, you know, the conversations of self-care, like we were talking about before we started recording, is there's so many components to self-care that I think that are overlooked. And when people think of self-care, they do think of either, you know, the bubble baths and pedicures and shit like that, which is fine. Like, I am pro bubble baths. That is one of my self-care regimens. Like, I love me some bubble baths. But sometimes self-care feels really not great. And some of those things would be like feeling your emotions. Going to therapy isn't always a wonderful thing to experience, you know, in the time when you're actually being vulnerable. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it means going to the gynecologist and getting a pap smear. All of these things are forms of self-care to preserve yourself so you can keep moving forward and showing up in your life. So I really like to blow up the idea of self-care where it's not just like Mariah Carey, you know, bubble baths and champagne and chocolate and diamonds, where it really is, you know, how are you going to continue showing up in your life? And what is the best way that you can do that? And taking it from all different components of who we are as a person. So physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, psychologically, and spiritually, that all encompass who we are. And understanding that sometimes self-care doesn't always feel good. And that self-care isn't about bringing guilt or shame into it. And self-care is way different than coping mechanisms. So I like to blow that idea up and just kind of lay some truths around that.
Yeah, I like that you said that self-care is not a coping mechanism, because I feel like that is definitely a lot of people's perception, that it's like a way of like dealing with your problems. And really, it's just a way of taking care of yourself so you can deal with your problems, because there's always going to be problems.
Yes. So an analogy that I like to use a lot is that, and I like to use little things like this because I think it helps people understand it. So self-care is kind of like a raft that you're floating along in the ocean. So self-care is the raft that keeps you afloat in this ocean, which is metaphorically life. Mm-hmm. And coping mechanisms are what helps you pull yourself from the bottom of the depths of the ocean when your ass gets knocked down, because that's going to happen in life. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is, how much time are we spending on the depths of the ocean? Why are we not trying to maintain ourselves afloat and understanding that there is a difference? Because a bubble bath isn't necessarily going to help you pull you from the depths of the ocean when you're feeling really shitty. It might help, but it's not the same. So coping mechanisms are going to be a little bit different than self-care. And self-care really is how you stay afloat all along. So that's just a little analogy that I kind of like to show the difference. One is upholding yourself, so self-preservation, and coping mechanisms is what literally pulls you from the depths of the ocean when you get knocked on your ass.
I like that a lot. I think that illustrates it very, very well.
Yeah.
And I like talking about self-care a lot too with motherhood, because I have a 7-year-old stepdaughter and I also have a 1-year-old, and I feel like there's a lot, like, in, I don't know, the motherhood community, like collective motherhood, I guess, it's almost like frowned upon. And I am very vocal about like my self-care, and I'll post about it on social media. And for me, that's sometimes like taking time away from my kids and just being able to fill myself back up. And I feel like that is like kind of frowned upon, or it's kind of like a taboo with other moms. So I think like encouraging people to like ask themselves like what they need in the moment, or what they need to be able to like show back up fully. It's so important for everybody, you know? And I think with motherhood, it's like, oh, like you're selfish.
Yeah. And I think that's a narrative that even if you don't have children, but especially when you have children, there's so much just like crap with motherhood. I don't have children yet, but I'm well aware of all the narrative that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. And this is something that my friend Erin Brown, you know, I kind of talked to her about it because she does have a child and she is very vocal with, you know, making sure self-care is a priority. And I think the thing that she has said really, really helped me is that she would never allow her child to go without shoes. So it's not that her child's never going to be not going to be cared for. It's just a matter of how she's allowed to care for herself, and that she's important as well, that she is a whole person. And how is she going to model that to her child and teach that to her child, that she's important, deserving of her own care, if she's not doing it for herself? So I think that was a really good way, because we do learn from our parent, and mm-hmm. oftentimes from our same sex parent, if we do have the same sex, you know, in our family dynamics or whatever. But how are you going to model this behavior to your child? And what is that actually saying if you're only putting yourself second or third, or not even thinking about yourself? And it also helps you, self-care really does help you be more fully present in your life. So I think that that's a narrative that you kind of have to get behind and understand that it's not selfish. Like I said, it's an act of self-preservation, and it's a necessity to continue showing up in your life. And if you continue putting yourself on the back burner, how's that going to work out 15 years from now? And what is that, you know, showing to people around you that are now learning from your behaviors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved your episode with Erin Brown. I think that is like whenever you guys were talking about like the self-care thing, I was like, man, I showed a lot of my mom friends that episode. I really loved that one. Because, I mean, your kids will always be a part of your life, but they're going to grow on and do other things. And if you don't have a relationship with yourself and you're not well taken care of, then what do you have? And then what do they have, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, true. It's really important. I think that there's just this idea that, like, if I take care of myself, then I'm neglecting almost. Like, that's almost the narrative that you hear. Like, I'm neglecting my child, which is just bullshit. That's not the case. Yep. Like, it's not the case at all. Like, taking a moment for yourself is not neglectful. It's actually a way of caring, in hindsight, a roundabout way, caring for your people that you love, because now you're able to do so in a more present manner and able to do so more effectively when you're cared for yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I'm curious about your input on, because I've heard this from people, and I'm sure you have too, if not more so. But what is your rebuttal to the notion that body acceptance or even just this whole realm is unhealthy or letting yourself go, and both of those things in quotes?
Well, I think there's two parts of this question. So body positivity actually has nothing to do with health. Health is not something that is inherently involved with body positivity. Regardless of someone's health status, however someone defines that, but usually it's defined by what our culture and our society says, they're still welcomed within the body positive movement. The body positive movement really is on the basis of allowing people to have respect, compassion, and kindness, and the same privileges that other people don't have. So it really has nothing to do with health. So that's one component of it, that body positivity has nothing to do with health. It is on the basis of its roots in fat activism. It has its roots in feminism. And it really is on the basis of a social and political movement to help eradicate body hate and fat phobia. So that doesn't have anything to do with health. Now, the other component of letting go of dieting or accepting your body is, quote unquote, letting yourself go, or quote unquote, that I'll never take care of myself, is just a myth. And it's just complete crap. We've been conditioned through fitness and health and everything else, and what we believe ourselves is that we have to use blame and disrespect and motivate us to take care of ourselves. And that's just not the case. If you know from experience, that often does motivate you for a short term, right? Like, yeah, that's fine. For a short amount of time, it will motivate you to, quote unquote, care for yourself, however that is defined by you. But in long term, it actually doesn't. And what studies show is that when we accept our body and we do so from a way of compassion, respect, and kindness, we're more likely to care for ourselves in a more holistic manner moving forward. So it actually is just a big giant myth scientifically. And also the bigger question I have to ask is, what exactly are you letting go of? Mm-hmm. Like, what is that for you? What are you actually letting go of? Are you letting, because really the only thing you're letting go of is the narrative of upholding diet culture and fat phobia and using blame and disrespect and shame as a motivating factor. And if that's what letting go means, then by all means, let that shit go, because it's not serving you. So what are you exactly letting go of is a question to kind of get curious about for your own self, if that's kind of what's popping up. Now, with my experience and the people that I've worked with and coached, body acceptance actually has the opposite effect, where we care for ourselves in a more holistic manner, like I said, where mm-hmm. we are taking into account our mental well-being. We're taking into account our physical well-being, where we're looking at sleep, prioritizing sleep and stress and rest and all these other things that are important to us. And we're participating in movement. If that's something that we want to do, we're participating in movement that is in alignment with what we want and what we enjoy. And oftentimes is more sustainable for the long term versus doing it out of shame and punishment, where you're on, off this proverbial wagon, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it actually is just a myth. What happens traditionally is that you end up caring for yourself more in a more holistic manner for most people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I definitely care about and for myself now way more than I ever did when I was obsessed with what I was eating and how I was moving my body, for sure. I didn't have time to think about if I had slept or anything like that. I was too worried about, you know, counting almonds or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And if you really think of diet culture as a whole and dieting, you know, dieting really is an act of self-harm. And mm-hmm. I know that it's an act of violence and self-harm. And I know that probably is like, you know, breaks and screeches to people like, what the hell? But it really is, because it's not natural for us to push our bodies outside of a point and actually starve ourselves. Like, if you think about if this was somebody, and this was being done by somebody out, like an outside source to somebody, then that would almost be called abuse, right? Like, nobody, if somebody was making somebody move 2 hours a day or an hour a day past exhaustion, you know, taking food away from them and starving them, punishing them, you know, blaming them, shaming them, that's not stuff. If somebody else, like an outside source, was doing that to somebody, we would be like, what is wrong? Like, that is not okay. And we would be like, no, we would speak up. But that's what we're doing to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So dieting in and of itself is actually can be harmful, because we are not listening to our own body's wisdoms, and we're overriding our own body's, you know, natural cues. So it actually can be a little damaging. So, yeah, more, like I said, on body respect and health at every size, Linda Bacon kind of goes into that. But, yeah, so if we really want to care for ourselves, then I think if we really, really, really want to care for ourselves, then that would actually mean to ditch the diet, because it's not actually caring for ourselves in the long run.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I love what, Julie Duffy Dillon says about her stance on the whole letting yourself go. She says, it's not letting yourself go, it's letting yourself be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love
exactly.
So I wanted to, I'm mindful of the time, and I could talk to you all day. I love all this input that you're giving us. But I wanted to ask you about your podcast, your Reclaiming You podcast, where you came up with that name and what it's all about. And yeah.
Yeah, so Reclaiming You is something that has been pretty prominent in my own journey, and it's something that I really just want to kind of amplify. So Reclaiming You really is on the basis of coming back home to ourselves and reclaiming ourselves from what we think we should be from society and our culture, or the narrative or the inner critic that we have in our mind, and really just coming back home to who we really are. So it's about reclaiming ourselves from these, all these external things, and recognizing this is who we are. So that's how I kind of came up, you know, with the name, on that. But what I cover on my podcast, the Reclaiming You podcast, is a variety of things. So obviously it's anti-dieting, it's about body positivity, it's about, fat acceptance and fat activism. I talk about health at every size, living your damn life. I also blow up some myths around traditional health things. So like the idea of willpower, the idea that there is a sugar addiction. I just did one on the struggles with self-care. So I blow up a lot of myths. And then I also have guests on where I talk to them about how they reclaimed themselves, really. So we cover a few things. There's obviously intersectional feminism. So it also touches on some racism, classism, and all the intersections that exist within diet culture in and of itself. Because it's a very, it's a big topic. It goes mm-hmm. way deeper than just, you know, ditch the diet. It's all on the basis of this culture that we've been conditioned to believe in. So that's what it's about. It's really great. I have some amazing guests on it, and it's been really fun to do that.
Yeah, I love it. I'm pretty sure I've listened to every single episode, and I'm subscribed to it. And I think it was like a big influence in me doing my own podcast too, because in one of your episodes in the beginning, you talked about how you kind of like doubted yourself, and you weren't sure if you should do it or how it was going to turn out, and you were just going to put it out there, as imperfect as it was or wasn't, you were just going to put it out there and do it. And so I was like, man, that's what I need to do, because I could just pick it apart all day and convince myself why I shouldn't do it, but I just need to shut up and do it and get it out there.
Yeah,
so it totally inspired me.
It really is just the, you know, that's the perfectionist inner critic
yes.
that so many of us that come from diet culture have, because diet culture demands perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something that I still have a little bit within myself that I navigate through, because our inner critics are never going to go away. We just have to learn how to navigate through them and not listen to them, and really understand that when we are trying to be perfect, that's also another podcast that I did. It was a solo show where I talked about embracing imperfection. When we strive for perfection, it really is a protective mechanism on the basis of trying to be accepted and validated by other people.
Yeah.
So when we can understand that, then we can see, okay, you know what, like, what's more important, and work through that, and then understand that we're all imperfect and we're all making mistakes all the time, and we're all going to have bumps. And if somebody can't accept that, then I don't really want their acceptance anyway. And then we figure it out. Like, everybody, I believe that we're all resilient human beings, and that just like we said earlier, with the worst case scenario, if that actually happens, many of us will be like, okay, well, this is what I would do in that scenario. We also were resourceful in figuring shit out. So yeah, I started that podcast and it was messy as hell. It still is at times where I make mistakes, and I'm okay with that. I think it just shows the humanness that we all are. And that's something that diet culture does not allow us to see, is that we're all humans.
Yeah, I recorded my first little solo episode, just like intro about myself and everything. And I'm pretty sure I recorded it like 5 different times. And I was like, all right, you need to take a break and then just go back and do it and stop trying to pick everything apart and just be such a perfectionist, because that's something I still struggle with so much. It's like it like transferred, you know, and I'm like, oh, I'm so much more aware of it now. But I'm like, man, this is ridiculous. I should not be recording the same thing 6 times.
Yeah. And I love that you said that it transferred, because that's something that I see a lot with my clients. I think there's this idea that when we learn to accept our body and we have peace around food and movement, if that's something that we want to do, that like we'll never have any issues ever again. And that's such a lie.
Yeah.
It's just that our inner critics then can shift, and they're showing up in different ways in our life. And so that's why it's important to understand them and recognize them and then navigate how to move through them, which is a lot of the work that I do with my clients. So we can't just turn our backs and tell them to shut up. Like, that just amplifies them, and they're just going to continue showing up in our lives. So we have to learn how to nurture them and work with them in our life and understand that they're really here to protect us. So when they pop up, to ask ourselves, okay, what am I scared of, and how can I offer myself compassion in this manner to move through this?
Yeah, so true. Well, thank you so much for all of your time today. I, like I said, I could probably talk to you so much more, but I won't keep you. But thanks.
So that's it for today, guys. I hope you all enjoyed it. Thanks again to our guest, and thank you for listening. We'll have a new episode next week. Until then, keep being you, just the way you are.